You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 100 by Rudolf Steiner. We are on the first of two lecture cycles in this book, entitled Theosophy and Rosicrucianism. This is Lecture 2, given in Kassel on the 17th of June, 1907. Yesterday we had a kind of introduction, speaking about the aims and nature of the spiritual scientific movement. Today we'll go straight into the essential nature of this science. There is the disadvantage that people who are not familiar with these things may suffer something of a shock, but one has to be patient and be clear in one's mind that many things that to begin with seem quite nonsensical will prove to be something that will turn out to be consistent in itself and comprehensible as time goes on. As to the subject we have been given, we'll first of all have to consider the essential nature of the human being. Let us consider this human being, meaning ourselves. Human beings are highly complex entities, the most complex we may meet with in the world which is familiar to us. This is why people who are able to see more deeply have always called the human being a microcosm, compared to the macrocosm which is the universe. Paracelsus found a good image for the nature of man. Consider the natural world around you, and imagine every plant, animal, and stone to be a letter in an alphabet. Make a word of these letters, and you have the human being. We also see the truth of Goethe's words that you have to understand the whole of nature if you are to find the human being. To begin with, the things I am going to say today will be just an outline of man's nature. They will relate to the things we will be considering in the next few days concerning the nature of man, the way a charcoal sketch does to the finished painting. Using our senses to study the human being here on earth, as we see him with our eyes, feel him using the sense of touch, this is the human being in his entirety, seen from the materialistic point of view. For a spiritual view of the world, which goes deeper, this is, however, only a small part of the human being, whom we are able to perceive with our physical senses. It is the part which anatomists dissect in their endeavor to understand, reducing it to individual cells that can only be seen under the microscope, and so trying to get a picture of the structure and functions of individual organs. All this is taken to be the physical body by scientists. But people are very often getting the wrong idea about this physical body, for they believe that the human being one has before one in life is nothing but this physical body. That is not at all the case. For the higher aspects of human existence are closely bound up with it. They use the physical body as their instrument, and it is only thanks to them that the individual appears the way he does to us, sharing our world. This physical body would look very different if we were able to separate it from the higher aspects of human nature. Human beings share their physical body with the whole mineral world. All the substances and forces that play between the individual minerals, iron, arsenic, carbon, and so on, are also at play in the substances in the physical bodies of human beings, animals, and plants. We are immediately aware of the higher aspects of human nature when we consider the tremendous difference between this physical body and the other forms of matter that exist in the world around us. You all know that this admirable composition, which we know as the physical body, has an inner life, as we call it, conscious awareness, pleasure and pain, joy, love and hate, and that this physical body contains not only the mineral substances, but also thoughts and ideas. You clearly see the red cheeks and the hair color, but you do not see the pleasure and pain, joy and suffering, and so on. We do not see these, but they do all run their course within the integument of skin. This in itself is the clearest and incontrovertible proof that there has to be something else, apart from this body, and not only physical matter. When you see a tear arise, this tear is a purely physical expression of the sadness that is felt within. Consider the mineral world. Silence. No joy, no pain, nothing of all that is perceptible. A stone has no feelings, nor any of the conscious awareness we have. For the spiritual scientist, this stone is like the nails on our fingers or our teeth. Look at a nail. It too has no feeling, no sentience, and yet it is part of us. We must have something in us which causes nails and teeth to develop. In the same way, there is something in the world which produces the minerals. Nails have no conscious awareness themselves, but they are part of something which does have conscious awareness. If a small insect crawls across the nail may perhaps be a mineral to it. That is how it is when we crawl across the ground and do not realize that there is a conscious mind behind this mineral soil, just as there is a conscious awareness behind the nail. We shall see that there is a world and a conscious awareness behind the mineral world. This capital I consciousness of the mineral world is a long way above us, more or less the way in which our conscious awareness, which is behind the nail, is a long way above that of the insect crawling across the nail. In Rosicrucian philosophy, this conscious awareness in the mineral world is ascribed to a world called the, quote, world of reason, close quote. There, the conscious awareness of minerals is to be found, and it is also the source and origin of human powers of reasoning, which allow us to develop thoughts. But the thoughts that live in us are most deceptive. The human thought world relates to the spirits of this rationality more or less the way our shadow on the wall relates to us. The shadow on the wall is not me, but merely my shadow. In the same way, human thoughts are but shadow images of the spiritual world. The reason why a thought develops here is that there truly is a creative spirit in the world of reason which produces the thought. It is a world where our thoughts are real entities, which you meet there just as here you meet another person. To initiates, this is known as the upper Devakan world, the Arupa Devakan of the Indians, or also the higher mental world, that is the Rosicrucian's world of reason. When an initiate goes through this physical world, life speaks to him on every patch of ground, and he feels the other world manifesting itself in everything. In our physical bodies, we are mere pieces of this physical world, and we, therefore, also have a subordinate physical awareness, which goes as far as the upper world of reason, the world where the mineral world has its conscious awareness. Our physical body is mineral as far as its substance is concerned, and the conscious awareness of this physical body is also in the place where we find the conscious awareness of the mineral world. What is the difference, then, between this physical body and a mineral such as a rock crystal? If we compare our body with a crystal, we will immediately see that compared to this, it is highly complex. Just consider the difference between a mineral and a living entity. There is no difference as far as substance is concerned, for a living entity contains the same materials as a mineral, except that the composition is much more complex. When you have a mineral before you, it has its particular form, and left to itself, it will stay the same. It is not like this with a life form, with plant, animal, and human being. For as soon as matter becomes so complex that left to itself it can no longer stay as it is, be what it is, but would have to disintegrate, there is something present in this matter which prevents its disintegration. And we then have a life form before us. In spiritual science, we therefore say that left to itself a life form would disintegrate into the individual components of its substance, unless the preventer of such disintegration were also present in it. This preventer is something we call the ether, or life body, though it is entirely different by nature from the physical matter that makes up the physical body. It is able to create and maintain the most complex organic matter in every life form and prevent its disintegration. We call something which thus shows itself quite outwardly in an organism life. This ether, or life body, or body of creative powers, cannot be perceived with physical eyes, but certainly can be perceived if one has the first degree of clairvoyant vision. The seer must go through such inner development that he will be able to see this ether body just as we see the physical body with the physical eye. Modern scientists are no doubt also looking for this ether body, but speculation is used to get an idea of it, and people will speak of, quote, power of life or vital energy, close quote, for instance. How does this ether body present itself to the clairvoyant eye, EYE, the clairvoyant individual? If you look with the seer's eye at something from the mineral world, say, a rock crystal, leaving the physical matter aside by letting your focus shift, as it were, you will see nothing at all in the space occupied by the physical crystal. The space is empty. If you look at some life form, plant, animal, or human being, in this way, the space occupied by the physical body will not be empty, but filled with a kind of light form. And that is the ether body which we mentioned before. This ether body is not the same for all life forms, but actually most variable, also with regard to its form and size relative to the physical body of the life form in question, depending entirely on the developmental stage that the life form has reached. In plants, the ether body has quite a different form from the plant itself. In animals, it shows greater similarity to the outer form of the animal. And in human beings, the ether body presents as a light form that has almost the same shape as the physical body. If you look at a horse from this point of view, you will see, for instance, the ether body as a light form that projects quite a bit beyond the head, anterior to the forehead, though it is approximately adapted to the form of the horse's head. In the average person today, you will see the ether body project only a little above and on either side of the head. As to the substance of the ether body, people usually have the wrong idea of the materiality of it. In the Theosophical Society, too, people say and write much that is erroneous concerning the ether body. But those are the teething troubles of the society which have to be overcome. To get the right idea of the ether body's substantiality, please follow me in making a comparison. Imagine you have 100 marks and are spending more and more of it. Your funds will be less and less, and finally there'll be nothing left. That would be the most reduced state of your finances. But there is one that is even more attenuated, for you reduce the zero funds even further by going into the red, that is, entering into debt. It is thus possible to reduce your funds even further, for if you have a debt of, say, 10 marks, you have less than nothing. Or, imagine the same concept applied to something else. Imagine a battle. The din is tremendous. Go further and further away from it, and the din will be less and less. It will be quieter and quieter until you don't hear any more of it. Reduce this nothing you hear, and it will be quieter than quiet, more soundless than soundless. Such stillness does indeed exist. And it will be beatific to the highest degree, though people will not find it easy to imagine this, in the general run of things. Now consider these examples applied to the density of matter. Initially, you will find the familiar states of aggregation, solid, fluid, gaseous, or airy. But we must not stop there, just as we did not stop in the case of our finances. We are able to attenuate our funds until they are negative. In this case, too, matter is attenuated more and more beyond the gaseous state. Imagine a form of matter that would be the opposite of physical matter, and you will have an approximate idea of what ether consists of. With negative funds, the conditions are the opposite of positive. Being in the black makes you rich. Being in the red makes you poor. The more money I have, the more can I buy. The less money I have, the less can I buy. And the cosmic ether, the ether body of every life form being part of this, also has the reverse properties of physical matter. Where solid matter seeks to fall apart, the ether body seeks to draw everything together and prevent the physical body, which it inhabits, from disintegrating. This disintegration into the individual basic substances begins as soon as the ether body of a life form departs from it, or, in other words, when the life form enters into physical death. We have now followed matter into a world where its action is the opposite of the way in which physical matter acts. When I say that in human beings the ether body is similar in form to the physical body, this takes us to a fact which we must know. A fact I am going to mention here because important conclusions for the later lectures arise from it. The words I have spoken require a most important limitation, for in reality the ether body is very different from the physical body, really resembling it only in its upper part, the head region. It is very different from the physical body in that it is of the opposite gender. The ether body of a man is female, and conversely that of a woman is male. Every individual is bisexual. The physical gender is but an outward reflection, and has its opposite in the ether body. A magnet has a north and a south pole, and there is no magnet that has a north pole only. And here, too, we have pole and counterpole. This ether, or life body, also known as creative powers body, is therefore the second principle of the essential human being. From birth to death, it is closely bound up with the physical body, and death ensues when this body separates from the physical body. The physical body is created by the ether body, which is the architect, as it were, of the physical body. To get an idea of this, think of water and ice. When water cools down, it assumes a different form and turns into ice. Just as water turns to ice in a process of condensation, so is the physical body differentiated out from the ether body. Ice, water. Physical body, ether body. It means that the powers of the ether body have become tangible, physically perceptible in the physical body, just as water actually contains the powers that then come to expression in solid ice. So does the ether body contain the powers that will build up the physical body. The ether body has the inherent power from which the heart, the stomach, the brain, and so on, differentiate out. The idea of every organ in our physical body exists already in the ether body, not in material form, but as energy currents. Human beings have an ether body in common with all plants and all animals, that is, with all physical entities that have life. Now, the question may be raised if plants have a form of conscious awareness, in the sense in which we have found the mineral world to have conscious awareness. As we have seen, the conscious awareness of minerals may be found in the upper world of reason, using the means of spiritual science, which is also where our thoughts have their source and origin. Our fingers do not have an independent conscious awareness, their awareness being part of the whole human being's conscious awareness. In the same way, the conscious awareness of plants is part of a greater one, and this is to be found in the lower world of reason, the world of stars, of heaven, of Rupa Devaka. When the spiritual investigator enters into this world, he meets there the souls of the plants. These souls are entities there, just as we are here. And these entities relate to the plants in roughly the way in which a human being relates to his fingers. The conscious awareness of plants is thus anchored in this lower Devakan world. There, one finds the roots of all powers that are behind growth and all organic development. The powers that build up our own physical body also have their roots there, which means the powers of our ether body, which we have earlier called the architect of the physical body. This conscious awareness of the plant world is much more sublime and full of wisdom than the conscious awareness of human beings. You will understand this as soon as you consider the wisdom that lies in the structure, not only of the human physical body, but of all life forms endowed with ether bodies. Think of the infinite wisdom needed to build the simplest physical body of some life form, let alone the most elaborate composition among all life forms on earth, the human body. Consider the upper part of the human thigh bone, for example. The individual trabeculae, bars or columns of bone tissue, are most marvelously put together according to all the rules of architecture. The thigh bone is much more complex here than it appears when seen from outside. It is made up of a scaffolding of bars, where the angles between them are arranged with such wisdom that the smallest amount of matter is needed to support the whole body. Truly a greater work of art than the most complicated bridge structure. And all the art of engineering in the world cannot match it. Or consider the structure of the heart. It is built with such wisdom that human beings with all their wisdom are mere children compared to the wisdom revealed in this. Amazing what the heart manages to cope with in spite of human stupidity, with people doing their best to ruin it almost every day. For instance, by consuming stimulants such as coffee, alcohol, and nicotine. The powers needed to produce such a marvelous structure as the physical body extend all the way up to the astral world, and only the spirits of this astral world are sufficiently intelligent, to use a commonplace term, to build such a physical body. This brings us to the third principle of the essential human being. Plants have a physical body and an ether body, but they do not have something which animals and human beings have. They do not have suffering, pleasure, pain, or any kind of sentience. In this they differ from animals and human beings. The difference is due to the fact that internal processes take place in animals and human beings. In more recent times, scientists have wanted to ascribe sentience also to plants because of processes observed in them. It is pitiful to see the nonsensical way in which terms are used. For here we do not see the kind of inner processes that occur wherever sentience is found. This sentience might equally well be ascribed to litmus paper. But that is what happens when people look for sentience here in the physical world. In the physical world, you do not find that the kind of phenomena observed in some plants involve sentience. You have to go to the heavenly worlds for that. Let me add at this point, so as to avoid misunderstanding, that in plants that are said to show reactions, mimosa, for instance, this stimulant process evokes sentience not in the physical world, but only in the lower world of reason, which is where plants have their conscious awareness. Down here in the physical world, only human beings and animals know desire and passions, pleasure and pain. Why? Because they have an astral body as well as a physical body and ether body. And that is the third principle in essential human nature. The way the astral body presents itself to the seer is as an egg-shaped cloud that envelops the whole human being. This cloud reflects all sentience, every drive, every passion. It is therefore the vehicle for pleasure and pain, joy and suffering. The situation is different with this third principle from the way it is with the physical body and ether body. For when human beings sleep, only the physical and ether body remains in the bed. The astral body and the capital I have risen from it. When astral body and ether body depart from the physical body, death ensues, and with it the disintegration of the physical body. Why is this principle known as the astral body? No other term is more apt. Why? Because this principle has an important function, and we must be clear about this function. The astral body is far from idle during the night, for it is evident to the seer that it works on the physical and ether body during the night. During the day you wear your physical and ether body down. For everything you do wears down the physical body, and this is evident from the fact that it grows tired. During the night, the astral body repairs the wear and tear caused during the day. It is a fact that in sleep, the astral body takes away the tiredness. This shows the importance of and necessity for sleep. The seer is able to make those repairs deliberately. The refreshing nature of sleep is due to the fact that the astral body has really been working on the physical and etheric body. Yet when the astral body has to return to the physical and ether body, the refreshing effect of sleep only shows itself gradually, about an hour after we wake up. Another important thing is connected with the departure of the astral body during sleep. When it connects with the outside world during the day, when we are awake, the astral body must live together with the physical and ether body. But when it separates from the body in sleep, it is freed from the fetters of physical and etheric body. And then something quite wonderful happens. The powers of the astral body extend all the way to the world of stars, where the souls of plants are. And it gains its strength from that world. The astral body rests in the world in which the stars are embedded, This is the world of Pythagoras's harmony of the spheres. It is absolutely real and not fantasy. Living consciously in that world, one hears the harmonies of the spheres. You hear the powers and relationships of the stars resounding. Goethe was an initiate in this sense, and it was in this spirit that he wrote the beginning of his prologue, In Heaven, in Faust. Quote, "The sun proclaims its old devotion in rival song with brother spheres, and still completes in thunderous motion the circuits of its destined years. Angelic powers uncomprehending are strengthened as they gaze their fill. Thy works, unfathomed and unending, retain the first day's splendor still." Close quote. Goethe is not well known today, and people usually don't know that he was an initiate, simply saying that a poet uses such images. But Goethe knew that the sun is in a round dance, and as sun spirit does resound. He stayed with the image, therefore also saying, quote, "Hear the tempest of the hours, for to spirit ears like ours, day makes music at its birth. Hear it, gates of rock are sundering, and the sun god's wheels are thundering. See, with noise light shakes the earth, hear it blare, its trumpets calling. Dazzling eyes and ears appalling, speechless sound unheard for dread." Close quote. This is the world of stars where the astral body is during the night. During the day it enters into a kind of disharmony with worldly things. But at night in sleep it is secure in the bosom of the world of stars. And it then returns in the morning with the powers gained in that world. You return from the astral world with the harmony of the spheres as you awaken from sleep. The world of stars, the astral world, is the astral body's true home, which is how it got its name, astral body. We have now made the acquaintance of three principles in essential human nature: physical body, ether body, astral body. We'll get to know the fourth principle, the capital I, the next time. The I is the principle which makes man the pinnacle of creation, raising human beings above the animal level. Animals do not yet have the conscious awareness which human beings have. They do have an awareness, just as we have seen in the case of plants and minerals, but this conscious awareness of animals is in the astral world. The fourth principle in human nature, this I, comes together with the other three in the sacred fourfold nature of man, of which all the old schools would speak. Human beings thus have their physical body in common with the minerals, their ether body with the plants, and their astral body with the animals. The I is theirs alone, and this raises them above all else. We find in human beings an essence, as it were, of everything that we see spread out around us, truly a microcosm. If we want to know the human being, we must first get to know the world around us. We have to think of the three principles of human nature, these three bodies, as enveloping forms woven from very different regions. And we dwell in these bodies, that is, the I does, with the higher principles of essential human nature, the part of us that is immortal. The end of Lecture 2.